giving the correct injection. You'd be surprised the number of phone calls I get a year. Actually, one of the producer works very well, does a great job this past year, called me up and said, I synchronized my cows. None of them are coming to the estrus. I said, okay, so what have you done? He said, well, I ran them through all the, follow the protocol, pulled the cedars, ran them through the chute, and I gave them their luteolites. I said, well, how much did you give? 2 cc's, just like I always do. I said, luteolites is 5 cc's. Oh, I've always just done 2 cc's. Come to find out, his vet used to carry estrimate instead of luteolites. This year, when he went to his vet and bought prostaglandin, he bought luteolites, and he's just been used to giving 2 cc's. You know how many cows came into estrus off of 2 cc's of luteolites? Not very many. So we then turned to a natural service to resynchronize them and try to get survive his breeding season. So complying with those protocols becomes tremendous. Body condition will be talked a lot about tomorrow. There's several talks on nutrition. Disease, we need to control diseases. Dr. Holland will talk to us tomorrow about controlling diseases. The one thing I will point out in there is if you have naive heifers or you do not know the vaccination history of the heifers, please do not give them a modified live close to the breeding season, because there are negative effects. It says that straight on the label, but working with our extension vet in South Dakota, you'd be surprised the number of wrecks he has seen by people who bought animals that were claimed one thing and used the wrong vaccine and ran into wrecks. So make sure you know the history of your animals. What I want to spend the rest of the time talking about is embryonic mortality and how stress can affect that, especially starting with the heifer. If we look in the literature, for a long time it's been thought of that embryonic loss was just Mother Nature's way of getting rid of unfit genotypes. You know, we've all heard of curly calf, whatever one you want to name. There's hundreds of them out there that are mutations that can affect the calf. Well, that's true. There are an awful lot of these recessive mutations that, when they're present, the embryo will die. But a large dairy study looked at it, we see 6 to 7%. That's not that high. But what's normal conception rates? We say about 70%. I just told you if we put semen in, 95% of them conceive. What happens to that other 30%? Well, to understand that, and I know Dr. Inskeep's going to talk a lot about this tomorrow, we need to understand what's going on with that embryo. And what I like to point out is, okay, day zero is when that animal's in estrus. You breed her. She ovulates about 28, 30 hours later. We go through these first several cell divisions. Day 5 to 6 is when that embryo finally reaches the uterus. We do embryo transfer on day 7. Maternal recognition of pregnancy, day 15 to 17. It is 2 weeks after you breed that animal before she even knows she's pregnant. What's the easiest thing to lose? Something you don't know you have? If we do something to that cow in here, she doesn't even know she's pregnant, and she can actually lose it pretty easy. We do see embryonic loss down in here, too. But one of the things that got us interested in it is when we started looking at heifer development. And so if we think about that, how many of you have thought about how you work your heifers at weaning can affect their conception rates? When we look at things, when we wean an animal, we actually change that animal's thinking. And there's been a lot of work done on the sheep side looking at behavior. But looking at it, that weaning is when that animal really learns what to eat. Because you move its dependence from the mother to it being self-dependent and eating for itself. And so animals learn to graze. They actually learn to graze prior to weaning from their mothers and others around. But during their first year of life, their willingness to try new food decreases. This isn't just cattle. I've got a 4-year-old and a 7-month-old at home, and I can tell you they both have opinions on what they like and what they don't. And they don't mind telling you. Now, between 4 years and 7 months, they tell you different ways. One throws it at you and one just won't eat it. But they will both tell you what they don't like. But learning is important because this is how they survive. They learn the skills needed to eat and get in enough energy to maintain their body composition. How many of you have seen the literature or seen the stuff where you can train cattle to eat stuff that's normally invasive weeds? Yeah. How do you do it? Really slow over time, right? You start with a little bit and you have to teach them that it's not going to hurt them because the other animals weren't doing it. The same thing happens when you take an animal and you introduce it to a new environment. They go out, they eat a little bit, figure out if it's good for them or not, and then they'll eat more. Well, we were looking at things a few years ago, trying to figure out a more efficient way to develop heifers. And so we took the heifers at one of our research stations, split them in half at weaning, and half of them went out to pasture right after a weaning period. The other half stayed in the feedlot just like they always had. We managed them through the winter. These are average daily gains. You can see them bouncing around. May and June, this one surprised us. There is a huge drop there. This group here, the normal, which was developed in the feedlot up until May, had horrible average daily gains. Well, as part of the study, right after we turned them out to grass, we brought them back in. We took another weight on them a week later. And look what happened. They lost over 3 pounds per day for that first week they were turned out to grass. I'll be honest, we weren't expecting this. Fortunately, June 14th was the start of our breeding season. No difference in conception rates, no difference in percent cycling, but it was kind of, wait a minute. This research station is in the far western side of the state, so we have a late breeding season. What about the rest of the state where people usually keep their heifers in the feedlot until breeding and then they turn them out right away? So we started looking in the literature, and I found one paper that has looked at it that actually saw that dramatic of a weight change. And they took heifers and dropped them from 120% of maintenance to 40% of maintenance. They lost 4 pounds per day over 2 weeks. But what really stood out is 60% of them stopped cycling. Now, if I can stress an animal enough in 2 weeks to make her stop cycling, what's that going to do to that embryo that she doesn't even know she has? So we started looking at that. We've got 5 different replicates here, 421 heifers. Half of them were in the feedlot. Half of them were out on pasture for 30 or more days before the breeding season. Some of them went out right after weaning. Some of them stayed in the feedlot through winter because this would be a combination of research stations and cooperators. If we look in every one of those, and sorry, this is still in kilograms, the heifers that had experience had increased average daily gain compared to the naive heifers from AI to preg check, so a 42-day period. Now, there's some big differences there, but those are different herds everywhere from eastern South Dakota to western and different years. Some years we did not have very good forage. But what stood out, no difference in percent cycling prior to the breeding season. All of these were running 94, 97% cycling. We actually have more animals cycling in our lot group. Now, granted, there's no difference there. But there is a difference. 10% higher pregnancy rates in those animals that had at least 30 days grazing experience compared to those animals that didn't. Okay, we started doing this, these studies. We showed this to producers. We have a lot of producers in the state that breed in May. And it's kind of, we don't have grass for 30 days before the breeding season. So our next question was to look at, is there something else we can do? So we took same thing, feedlot developed heifers, synchronized bred them. We've tried to stay consistent on protocol. Moved half of them to pasture, just like these producers have always done. The other half we actually supplemented. We actually used 5 pounds of dried distillers per head per day from AI until preg check, so 42 days. Took pasture clippings, so we know forage quality. This is typical of our spring pastures. You can see variations just from different areas of the state. We did set this up. Our pasture alone actually had the higher quality pasture. What happened to pregnancy rates, though? The group that was supplemented, we see about a 15% increase in pregnancy rates. And I shouldn't say an increase, because actually it would be the other way. Our opinion is this is normal, and we're kicking these animals out to grass, and we're losing pregnancies. Well, the comment was made by one producer, oh, well, it's just because you're moving them. It's just because you're changing environment. So I said, okay. So we have producer, 333 heifers. These were all developed out on grass all winter long. Now, it's kind of hard to convince a producer to do this, but we actually took a third of his heifers that had never been in a feedlot before, synchronized bred them, and moved them to a feedlot. And so they actually got moved into a feedlot. A third went out to grass, and a third went out to grass, and we supplemented them. If we look at body condition scores, they all started 5-4s. The group that stayed the same, and you can see here we increased plane of nutrition in the feedlot, we increased plane of nutrition when we supplemented. What happened to pregnancy rates? Nothing. We're taking them, we move them into a feedlot. They don't have any choice. You put the feed in front of them. That's what they're going to eat. And so this isn't just a rumen change. And if we look overall, no difference in final breeding season pregnancy rates. This was only a 28-day breeding period. Again, forage qualities. As I said, you can see better nutrition when we supplemented or in the dry lot. And so the question became, what's actually going on? How can we affect that embryo? So we've actually been working with Alan Bridges at the University of Minnesota, flushing embryos. What we did, had a group of heifers, and we're up to 8 replicates now. Animals were on a gaining plane of nutrition from weaning to breeding. They were all synchronized. They were all AI'd. Some of them continued on that plane of nutrition. Others we restricted. We wanted to see what happened to embryo quality. So we actually flushed the embryos on day 6. We stained them. We counted cell numbers. If we look, embryo stage was decreased. Embryo quality was decreased. Remember, a higher number for embryo quality is a poorer quality embryo. So we have poorer quality embryos. We have less developed embryos. We have fewer total cells. And we have fewer cells alive. That's only 6 days of nutrient restriction, and we're affecting the embryo. So I've kind of been wondering, well, what's actually going on here? How are we affecting this? Because we know there's plenty of good quality forage out there. So this past year, we took a group of heifers, all developed in a feedlot, all in one pen, all the exact same from one producer, and we split them. One of them, at the start of the study, we moved them out to pasture for 44 days. The other one stayed in a feedlot, and then we moved them all out. Here's our weight change. So just like we saw before, we moved them out to begin with. These that moved out to grass, really no gain for the first, would that be 9 days? The ones that stayed in the feedlot, they stayed on their normal plane. Here's where we switched them, though. These had 44 days of prior grazing experience. These, when they just got moved out, looked at what they dropped. Again, sorry, that's in kilograms. That would be 1 1/4. You're almost 3 pounds a day lost there. Very similar to what we saw in our first study. So in this year, what we were really looking for was behavior. And so we actually put pedometers on these heifers. We wanted to see what they were actually doing. And if we look, these animals, when they were out on pasture, the group that got moved out early, on average, they were taking about 6,000 steps a day. And any day we had to bring them in to take weights or do something to them, we actually cut those days out because we didn't want to skew the data. So these are just days that they spent 24 hours without us out there bothering them at all. The group in the feedlot, about 2,500 steps. So what happened on day after 44 days when we swapped them? This group went from taking 2,500 steps to 17,000 steps. So you go sit on your couch for 9 months, and then get up and run a marathon and see what you feel like. You know, you're going from 2,500 steps here to 17,000. And they did that for, it took 5 days for them to actually settle back down and be similar to the other group. The group that had been out on pasture, they went right back to what they were. Now, we kept these two groups separate because we didn't want the behavior learned, so they were in pasture side by side. But we see that huge difference looking at them. And so there can be big changes in fertility starting all the way back from how you wean your calves. Now, I have people tell me all the time, "Sir, you're saying weaning them and developing them on range is better." No. Consistency is the best thing. We have producers that do both that we have worked with very closely. And some of this past year, we still had snow to the middle of May. There was no option to get cows out to grass. So yes, we have some producers that left them in the feedlot. We have others that keep feeding them for a period of time, but trying to be consistent. How else is a common way we stress animals, especially heifers? When do we ship those cattle after we breed them? This was some work done by Tom Gary up at Miles City. They took animals, synchronized bred them. Some of them they trucked days 1 to 4, so while that embryo was still up in the oviduct. Others they moved day 8 to 12, day 29 to 33. That was in the first study. And what they did is you can actually compare back. Those trucked day 1 to 4 had a 74% pregnancy rate, 62, so they contributed a 12% loss to the trucking stress. Now, this is spending 2 hours on a truck. As we see, we get further along in pregnancy, embryonic loss goes down. What was interesting, they did a follow-up study day 45 to 60. On day 45, they actually preg-checked them, trucked them down the road, and they still ended up losing about 6% of those embryos. Now, I know there's debate over trucking stress and how susceptible animals are. And there it is, variations in that. Some animals seem more stressful than others. I use our university herd as an example. We have great conception rates every year at our university herd. But guess what? Those cows go through a chute at least once a month, whether they need to or not. Either between a class, a study, or something, those cows are handled constantly. I laughed the other year we were doing a study. We were pulling hair from the tail for DNA samples. And so we just lined up the entire alleyway, pulled hair from the tail, opened up the chute, and was letting a whole alleyway out at a time. Every animal walked into the chute and stopped, like, "You're supposed to catch me." And actually, half the time when I'm there, they walk in and turn their head sideways because it's very seldom I put a cow through a chute. I don't take a blood sample from her. And so these cows have just learned. And I don't think I could stress them if I wanted to. At the same time, I see producers' cows that see humans when they get gathered each year, and they can be stressed pretty easily. The other question I get asked is, does trailing affect cattle? Well, I spent 2 years up at Miles City, Montana, at the USDA station, and we trailed cattle a lot. And I never once saw anything that would cause me to suspect trailing would affect the stress. Now, I've always said that, and I've had to kind of clarify things after a few years ago. I was talking a little bit about stress, and a producer asked me, well, how do you trail cattle? Well, you point them the right direction and you let them walk. You know, that's the way I was taught. And he was there, oh, well, I was just wondering because where we breed our cows at in our summer pastures is about 10 miles down the road, and my son and our hired man can get them there in about 15 minutes. That's not trailing. He was there, well, no, those four-wheelers will run fast. Okay, so yes, you can stress an animal trailing it, but that's not a definition of trailing. So what's the biggest thing of this? I'm not going to tell you you need to develop your heifers on range. I'm not going to tell you you got to keep them in the feedlot after you breed them. It's consistency. And I don't care what species you go through, if it's humans, if it's cattle, what it is, consistency is very important for embryo survival. And think about how you're managing things, how you're vaccinating, can you do to consistent? You don't want a huge change right after AI. Because if we stress that animal either by decreasing nutrition, by shipping stress, or whatever stress, that's a horrible time to keep our pregnancy rates. And so if we do that, I get calls every year blaming a synchronization protocol. And when you start asking questions, a lot of time it has absolutely nothing to do with the protocol. And so think about your herd management and how you manage those cows prior to breeding and after breeding until that embryo is well established. Are you giving up pregnancies based on management decisions you're doing? So let's say we do everything good there. We're still at 90%. The last one, fertility level of the semen. Dr. Sackey did a tremendous job talking about that. He has more experience than anybody I know on the male side. This is a study when I was up at Fort Keogh. 13 bulls we collected, froze, looked at under a microscope, just like Dr. Sackey said, could see no difference. They're several hundred head bred, and it looks like a roller coaster ride. This would be fixed time AI conception rates. So there are differences between bulls. I don't think anybody will ever deny that. Don't know any way to detect them. Dr. Sackey talked a lot about that. And that's what we have to look at. But let's say fertility level of the semen, 95%. So we do 90 to 95% on everyone. And where are we at? Our 73% normal conception rates. So part of it is thinking about reality and how good a bull does, how good can we do? And knowing all of these little things, we talk about the wonderful technologies, synchronizing, AI, embryo transfer, and there's an awful lot of management, there's an awful lot of... When we do studies that we call our herd variation or location variation that get grouped in there, that's based on how the animals were managed, and really has nothing to do with our synchronization, our semen, anything like that. And so fertility is this huge term that it's very hard to describe. We could all have a different definition. Is it conception rates? Is it pregnancy rates? Is it breeding season pregnancy rates? Knowing what you're measuring and comparing from year to year and seeing how your management is affecting it can be a tremendous measure. And so with that, I think we're going to do questions later. Sometimes there's nothing you can do about fertility. A friend of mine from Louisiana sent this to me. He said he was going to start a snapping turtle breeding project. And I wasn't sure that conception rates would be very good, but he never did tell me even how he was going to preg check. So with that, I will turn it back over.